Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Paul Nelson, a fellow of Discovery Institute and an adjunct professor in the Master of Arts program in Science and Religion at Biola University. Dr. Nelson is a philosopher of biology, and he's been involved in the intelligent design debate since its earliest days, going all the way back to the famous meeting at Pajaro Dunes in the early 1990s and even earlier. Dr. Nelson has written many articles and contributed to many books on intelligent design, and it's great to have you on the show today. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So our occasion for having Dr. Nelson on the show today is the passing of a very well-known paleontologist named David Raup, who passed away in July of 2015. Dr. Raup was known for sometimes expressing skepticism of some of the typical Darwinian views, although he himself was very much an evolutionist and very much committed to an evolutionary paradigm, but he was also very open-minded and willing to think outside the box. So Dr. Nelson, I know that you wanted to say a few words about the passing of Dr. Raup and some of your encounters and experiences with him over the years and his open-mindedness. So I'll hand the mic over to you to say a little bit about Dr. Raup.
He was a remarkable man in many respects, and there are several untold stories about Professor Raup's interactions with dissenters from neo-Darwinism, such as myself, or Kurt Wise, the paleontologist Kurt Wise, whom Raup mentored when Kurt was an undergraduate at the University of Chicago in the early 1980s. That's really Kurt's story to tell. I want to pick up the narrative in the early 90s when David Raup and Professor Philip Johnson, well-known advocate of intelligent design and skepticism towards Darwinism, when those two became friends. And I first met Raup in June 1993 at a now-famous meeting organized by Phil Johnson in the resort community of Pajaro Dunes on Monterey Bay in California. The background to that meeting can be sketched as follows. Phil had become very interested in putting together a group of people to talk about the current status of Darwinian theory. So he invited, I think, perhaps 20 people, I don't remember the exact number, from a variety of backgrounds, to come to a couple of beach houses there, literally on the beach, Pajaro Dunes, for a weekend to talk about evolutionary theory and possible alternatives to it. One of the people who accepted Phil's invitation was David Raup. They had become friends because in 1989, at a very interesting meeting in Massachusetts, the Campion Center outside Boston, Phil was present, David Raup was present, a number of other people. And by the way, for those who are interested, this is written up wonderfully in Tom Woodward's History of Intelligent Design, published a few years ago, called Doubts About Darwin. And Tom gives many of the relevant details. I'm just giving an overview. In any case, at that meeting in 1989, Phil Johnson and David Raup hit it off. And then there was a famous debate the next day. So they hit it off and began to talk on Friday. On Saturday, Stephen Gould, Harvard paleontologist, was present and fell into a very heated, long debate, one-on-one. This was unplanned that this would happen, one-on-one between Phil Johnson and Professor Gould. Raup was sitting to one side as an observer. In any case, Phil gave the manuscript, the core of the book that later became Darwin on Trial, to Raup, and their friendship developed. To cut to the chase, then in early 1993, when Phil organized this meeting, he invited Raup, and Raup came. And this was intended to be off the record, this meeting. So it was very informal. No one prepared papers beforehand. But what happened was the participants realized that each of us had some interesting perspective to bring on the questions at hand. There were four of them that Phil had pre-circulated in a letter to all the participants. People ended up giving informal talks using a whiteboard and just whatever notes they could throw together. Raup gave a talk with the fascinating topic, what would we expect to see if common descent were true in the fossil record? And does the paucity of transitional forms, so-called transitional forms in the fossil record, tell us anything about the truth or falsehood of common descent? A remarkable topic, and more or less right off the top of his head, gave this great presentation, and the discussion was so lively and had so many implications, he actually began interacting with faculty there that led to a series of papers on this topic. At the time, Ralph was a smoker. So during one of the breaks in the discussion, he went out on the deck of the beach house where we were meeting to have a cigarette. And a couple of people, including me, wandered out there with him. So he's smoking away. And I put a question to him that really had been bothering me. I said, Professor Ralph, what do your colleagues think of you being here? The fact that you're here meeting with people like Phil Johnson and Steve Meyer and Bill Dembski, well-known dissenters from neo-Darwinian theory. And Ralph took a long drag on his cigarette, and he said, Paul, I would be the last to know. And went on to explain that the social structure of science was such that, very much like the mafia, organized crime, I guess I should say, by the time you know you're in trouble with your colleagues, so to speak, it's too late. That the bad news goes around you, and that his participation in an event like the Harlem Dunes might get out into the grapevine, but he himself would not be directly confronted with this unhappiness. It would just go around him, and by the time he learned it, would in a sense be too late. And what struck me about that exchange was absolute realism about how the social structure of science worked, that it's a human enterprise, and if he was spending time with intelligent design advocates and this was creating problems for him, so be it, but he would be the last person to know. And that has stuck with me now for 22 years as a piece of really brilliant realism about how science functions at the social level. But let me give you another observation about Ralph's kind of, I wouldn't call it cynical, but very realpolitik view of what one could or could not say or do as a prominent evolutionary theorist. So several years later, I was involved in the production of Darwin's Dilemma from Illustrum Media about the Cambrian explosion. Ralph's an expert on that topic, world-class invertebrate paleontologist. We knew that he would have interesting things to say about the topic. So on behalf of the producers, I contacted him. I asked him, would you be interested in sitting for an interview with Illustrum Media about this topic? Simon Conley Morris is going to be featured in the film. We'll do a great job to represent you, but we would love to have you as an expert. And he wrote back to me and he said, Paul, sounds like a great project. I can't do it, and you know why. Again, that sentence, that statement has stuck with me for several years now, because he knew that, you know, that he had things to say about this question. A famous essay in 1979, published by the Field Museum, with the title Conflicts Between Darwin and Paleontology, Ralph explained that evolutionary expectations about the fossil record based on Darwinian theory were not being fulfilled. In fact, they were directly contradicted by what the fossil record showed. So he had clear, strong opinions about the challenge that the Cambrian explosion raised for standard evolutionary theory, yet he could not participate in a film on the topic because of the consequences and the cost, so to speak. So while Ralph was certainly a friend to many intelligent design proponents, Phil Johnson chief among them, but also myself and other people, he understood with great realism just what the limits were on what he could say and what he could do while maintaining his position as a leading evolutionary theorist.
Dr. Nelson, that's a fascinating anecdote you just told us, and I think it's revealing for the world to learn that David Ralph was at that early meeting of intelligent design proponents at Pajaro Dunes back in 1993. And this shows actually that there actually have been over the years quite a few high-level interactions between intelligent design theorists and leading evolutionary scientists, where evolutionary scientists were actually expressing some sympathies. But as you very correctly and persuasively just said through your anecdote, we can't always talk about those things. Those interactions cannot always be made public. And so the public doesn't get to hear about these things until, in this case, someone like David Raup has passed away, so his career is no longer in danger. It also speaks, I think, to the fact, Dr. Nelson, that, you know, we really don't want to see people become martyrs. We don't want to harm the careers of those who support us by talking about these stories when they're still alive and there's still a lot for them to lose. So the public doesn't know about, I would say, a lot of the interactions that have gone on behind the scenes over the years with folks like David Raup. You mentioned Tom Woodward's book, Doubts About Darwin, and it's interesting because just recently I was contacted actually by a theistic evolutionist who is very critical of intelligent design and critical of the work of Phil Johnson. I remember reading in Doubts About Darwin by Tom Woodward some of the praise that David Raup had said for Phil Johnson's work, and Tom Woodward quotes David Raup talking about Philip Johnson's writing, and this is what he quotes David Raup saying. So these are the words of David Raup. Phil Johnson's work is very good scholarship, and of course, this has been widely denied. He cannot be faulted. He did his homework, and he understands 99% of evolutionary biology. That's high praise from a leading evolutionary scientist like David Raup about the work of Phil Johnson. It just shows that when folks are willing to be courageous, I think that there's a lot more to be said in support of intelligent design than often the evolutionary community is willing to say.
I think you're right, and I think that Raup agreed with Phil that the fossil record, his own area of expertise, was not consonant with textbook neo-Darwinian expectations. Where they differed was on what possible alternatives existed in that situation. I think Raup never gave up his conviction that an evolutionary explanation that is evolutionary in the broadest sense would be found for these patterns. He placed a great deal of weight in his thinking on the role of chance processes in the history of life. But what I especially admire about him, and this has been the case in my interactions with prominent evolutionary biologists over the years, many of which, frankly, at this moment I cannot discuss because these scholars are still alive, their careers would be subject to unnecessary bumps in the road, so to speak, if these conversations became public. But let me say that what I admired about Raup was his willingness to engage. He valued the conversation. He valued the discussion. And he was honest about himself. I'll tell you an anecdote. I actually can't name the person involved on one half of the conversation. It was a scientist who had become friends with Raup. The scientist was actually a creationist. He and Raup would have conversations, and he told me recently that he and Raup, when Raup was still active at the University of Chicago, fell into a conversation once about some aspect of evolutionary theory. At one point in the conversation, Raup became frustrated, and he said to the scientist, "Oh, look, there's no point in us having this discussion. You're just too close-minded." And then Raup caught himself before the scientist could reply, and he said, "Well, actually, maybe I'm the one who's close-minded," and he laughed. In other words, he was able to step back and reflect on his own biases, on his own convictions or presuppositions, if you will, and recognize that they too might be wrong, that those views were not written in stone, and that the whole point of science, where we deal with questions of great uncertainty, like the history of life, is to allow for multiple competing hypotheses and have the conviction that in the end, the truth will prevail. So I really admired that about him. And he was a great guy to be around, a lot of fun, very honest, very open, a wonderful person.
Dr. Nelson, I really appreciate what you're saying and the kind words you've said for David Raup. I think if you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I think that you've had a lot more interactions with people like David Raup over the years, but it seems to me like sort of a common positive character trait we see in them is not just open-mindedness, but also courage. I mean, we're not saying that these people are supporting intelligent design. Clearly, as you said, David Raup was an evolutionist. He thought that ultimately material evolutionary mechanisms would be able to explain what we see. But at least he was open-minded, but also courageous enough to be willing to have the conversation and even sometimes express some of those open-minded ideas that he had. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. There's a basic principle that I've observed over and over throughout my 30 years as a participant in this debate, and that is when you consent to sit with someone and engage them in conversation, have a meal, go for a walk, share a beer, you are opening yourself to the normal human interaction of possibly being wrong. I mean, that's a potential cost that comes from saying to someone, you know what? We share an interest in this question. I'll listen to your objections. I'll listen to your thoughts. And scientists and philosophers who refuse to do that, and I've met a number of them over the years, they know that once they engage in that conversation, it's impossible to determine where it's going to end up. So instead of sitting down and saying, all right, let's look at the evidence, let's debate it back and forth, they won't even sit down. They refuse the social engagement because it is open-ended, and they don't know where it's going to go. By simply consenting to be involved in the discussion, Raup opens himself up for all kinds of potential outcomes. And I think many of us in the intelligent design community, what we want is that conversation, that open-ended discussion. That's what, in many cases, unfortunately, is denied to us. Although I think I'm encouraged by what I've seen, especially over the past few years, where more and more scientists are willing to engage. But Raup was leading the way. He was a pioneer in that respect.
Well, I hope that this is encouraging for our ID the Future listeners just to understand that ID theorists have had some very high-profile interactions with leading evolutionary scientists over the years. But you've got to find people who are willing to have that courage and that open-mindedness in order to be willing to do that. So, Dr. Nelson, thank you very much for sharing this encouraging anecdote with us today.
You're certainly welcome.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.